Welcome to your turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us. And we got to have a really good show today because we're truly following the money and going to maybe tell you how to make a lot more for yourself to have a very nice retirement nest egg in addition to your CSRS or FERS annuity when you retire. My guest is Arthur Stein. He is a financial planner. Or Arthur, you're an economist as well, aren't you?
I used to be an economist, yeah, but okay. Then I saw the light.
You get out of it, yeah. I really appreciate you having you here. He is very well known in the Washington area, based in Bethesda, Maryland, and you have a lot of clients that are feds and retired feds. And I talked to one of them independent of you. And I did a column on TSP, Thrift Savings Plan Millionaires, and he mentioned your name, and he said he was a client of yours. And we live in an interesting place. Going to be talking about the TSP Roth option today. A lot of people, myself included, don't have a good understanding of the Roth, except it can be an extremely good deal for some people, particularly if you don't like the idea of paying taxes. It can be a wonderful investment, and the Roth in and of itself is a great thing. The Roth available to federal workers in the TSP is even better for a variety of reasons. We got so many questions from listeners ahead of time, but let's get rid of those and then we'll go to the main focus here. This is from someone in Homeland Security. Three questions. Can I move my current TSP money into the Roth up to the $24,000 limit? I am over 65.
You cannot transfer money between the regular TSP and the Roth TSP. They won't allow you to do that. The only way to get money into the Roth TSP is to, with your contributions. And even the government's matching contributions do not go into the Roth.
Okay.
It's only the employees' contributions.
All right, and these,
going to the Roth.
That may have answered these other two. Can I still make another $24,000 donation to the TSP?
You can make the same contributions to the Roth TSP that you can make to the regular TSP.
Okay. And then he says, can I do this before I retire in June 2017 for the 2017 year? Idea being he'll only work a half a year, so the income will be less.
That I am not sure about.
Okay, we'll do a pass on that. Let's see here. Okay, here's this. Arthur may not be the right person to ask, but here goes. Since the Roth TSP is after taxes, why does this contribution reduce the amount we can contribute to our TSP pre-tax account? For example, if I wanted to put 5% of my pay in a Roth TSP, that will reduce the amount I can contribute to my TSP pre-tax by the same amount. This doesn't make any sense to me. If I'm already paying taxes on it, why should that reduce the amount of pre-tax money I can put away? I've always heard you should maximize your pre-tax TSP 401k investment, then put money in a Roth IRA if you can afford to do so. Yet the TSP does not allow us to do that. I'm glad you're here. I don't have a clue.
First of all, if you want to make contributions to the Roth TSP, all your individual contributions, that come out of your withholding from your salary have to go into the Roth TSP. You can't do some into the Roth and some into the regular. It has to be all your contributions. And why that's the same amount as your pre-tax contributions, it's just the way it is. I mean, it's the IRS regs.
Yeah, okay.
And I suggest that people never try and figure out why with taxes.
Yeah.
They just are.
It is, yeah.
And they frequently don't make sense.
Yeah. The why question doesn't make sense. Yeah. Once retired, can one convert previous regular TSP contributions to Roth TSP and make previous earnings tax-free, assuming once retired? Well, that's...
Okay. Let me just say this. You cannot transfer money from your regular TSP account to your Roth TSP account. You can't do that when you're working. You can't do that when you're retired. Now, when you're retired, you could transfer both your regular and your Roth TSP into a regular IRA and a Roth IRA. And then you can transfer, it's called a conversion, as much of your regular IRA funds as you want can be transferred into the Roth IRA. But when you do that, all taxes are due.
Okay.
That you owe.
Okay. Okay, here's one from Josie. She says, I have less than 10 years as a Fed and have been investing in regular TSP from the beginning and more recently in the Roth TSP. I plan to retire early at age 50 or 55, at which time I'll have 30 to 35 years of service. What are my best investment options to close the gap between minimum withdrawal age without penalty and when I plan to retire?
Well, the best investments for someone, it's a very individual decision. And, you know, Jossie, you know, I just don't have enough information to, you know, recommend different investments. I mean, long-term investments, short-term investments, when she's likely to need the money, these are all issues.
But you do caution people frequently about being too conservative.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are too conservative. I mean, I know a lot of, you know, employees, sometimes young employees, have all their money in the G fund. And, you know, historically, the G fund and even the F fund, when you take into account taxes and inflation, they lose purchasing power over time.
Yeah.
And that's pretty tough when you're in a long-term investment in those funds.
Right. And people under the civil service retirement system who have a better annuity, a larger annuity that's fully indexed to inflation, they're even safer. They can afford to take more risks because their annuity is safe.
See, I look at it a different way, okay, Mike, because FERS employees are probably going to need money from their investments to live on. I think they are less able to be conservative, especially when they're working, because they need their purchasing power to grow. Because, you know, like, you just say this question, here's somebody who wants to retire at 55. I mean, they could be retired for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
That would indicate to me that they're going to need a lot of money from their investments to live on.
Okay. Here's one from Leslie. It says, for those of us unable to listen today about the Roth program, will this show be archived later on? Yes, it will be. Lauren Larson, our producer, is going to put it up on our website right after we conclude this show. So if you miss it, or if you want to hear it again, or if you want to refer a friend to it, it will be available. And it's a good show. Okay, here's one. Michelle says, I participate in the TSP, making regular pre-tax contributions each pay period. I'm over 50 and in FERS. May I make a lump sum contribution to a Roth TSP this year, or do I need to set up another payroll deduction contributing a set amount or percentage each pay period?
Okay, the rules on contributing to the Roth are the same as contributing to the regular TSP. You know, the limit on what you can put in is the same. And you know, as I mentioned before, I'm not sure about the ability to make a lump sum contribution. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I know you can transfer money in if you come in from the outside in the private sector, but I don't know about that. Thank you. Okay. Okay, we did Robert. Okay. I appreciate the article on the Roth TSP. I look forward to the show today. My question is, if I have about $20,000 in my traditional TSP, but I have now been contributing to my TSP Roth, should I roll over my traditional TSP into the Roth or let those funds remain in the traditional, and why?
Okay, you have to leave your money in the traditional TSP that you've already put in. You cannot transfer from the regular TSP to the Roth TSP. So it's just not an option.
Okay, here's one from Tony in Denver. If your TSP is part Roth and part isn't, which or both is taxable? Also, which or both require RMDs?
Okay, let me just talk about the differences between the regular TSP and the Roth TSP. The traditional TSP, the money that you put in is tax deductible. So it's called pre-tax. It reduces your taxable income. So it's going to increase your take-home pay because you'll be paying less in tax. Once it's in the TSP, of course, earnings are all tax deferred. When you take the money out, all the money you take out is fully taxable, you know, because it was you got a tax deduction when you put it in. With the Roth TSP, the money you put in is not tax deductible. It does not reduce your taxable income. Once it's in, it's tax deferred, but when you take it out, there are no taxes on it. So the big advantage is that there are no taxes on withdrawals. The disadvantage is there's no tax deduction for the contributions.
Okay, and that's a huge difference, too.
It's a huge difference, and it's going to benefit some people and not others. Now, the general rule of thumb is if you think that your tax rate is going to be higher when you retire than when you're making the contributions, the Roth TSP definitely makes sense. If you think your taxes are going to be lower, then, you know, it may not make sense. And that's something we don't know because lots of people think tax rates are going up. Now, of course, younger federal employees, you know, are making less money than they probably will later in their career. So they could very well have lower taxes now than when they retire. But there are trade-offs. Remember, this is an individual decision for each person. And just as an example, you know, if you're a younger employee and making a Roth TSP contributions, because it reduces your take-home pay, it might reduce your ability to pay off a student loan or credit card debt. And I don't think that I would then recommend the Roth if if the reduction in take-home pay reduces your ability to pay off debt. Once you've paid off the debt, then you could start putting money in the Roth TSP. On the other hand, for a lot of people who aren't very disciplined, the fact that their take-home pay is lower when they're contributing to the Roth might be great because it might reduce their expenditures.
Yeah, good point. Well, you know, it just seems to me, and it's a totally personal thing, that this some people are obsessed with not paying taxes. I mean, they'll move to in fact, I know a guy who retired from GSA, never been further west than Illinois, I think. He retired in Washington State, and he's not an outdoor type, you know, not what you don't see him climbing the mountains or anything. And I said, why did you pick there? He picked a small town across the Columbia River from Portland, Oregon. So Washington State has no taxes, no state taxes. Oregon, at least at that time, had no sales tax. So he was, in effect, going to live in D.C. and shop in Virginia, or live in Virginia and shop in Maryland. And that's the way he made his life choice.
And one of the things, Mike, that makes this, you know, maybe a more difficult decision is we're really talking about the ability to reduce your taxable income now, or do you want to reduce your taxable income later? And having lower taxes in retirement because you are, for instance, withdrawing from a Roth TSP, it reduces your taxable income, and it might reduce the amount of taxes you're paying on your Social Security payment because the percentage you pay is based upon how high your income is. And if you have Medicare Part B, the premiums that you pay are based on your taxable income. And in both those cases, taxable income includes taxable withdrawals from your regular TSP account, a regular IRA account. So you could have those other advantages when you're retired.
Yeah, and as you say, it really is a personal thing. And I think trying to guess future tax rates is
impossible.
Silly. Yeah. Okay. Do we need to take a break here? Yeah, we can take a short break here. We'll be right back on federalnewsradio.com. Hey, Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He said as a reformed economist, used to be, and now you're a financial planner in the Washington area. A lot of federal clients, both active and retired people. So you know this stuff perhaps better than some other financial planners would, even in this area. And Arthur, your background always fascinates me. You taught at university in Australia.
Right. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Botswana after I got my master's in international economics. And my job there was I worked for their Ministry of Finance as an economist. And I was in charge of their foreign aid program.
Wow.
And then I went to Australia. I taught in a university there, and I came back, and I was a staff economist on the House Ways and Means Committee. And I ran my own business for a while, and then I've been a financial planner and investment manager for about 24 years.
Fantastic. Botswana, that's the gods must be crazy country.
That is.
Wonderful.
It is. They must be crazy if they let me work there.
Yeah, you handle their foreign aid.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple questions here. What about people who have two accounts?
Okay.
They have a regular TSP and a Roth.
If you want to contribute to the Roth TSP, you're always going to have two accounts, because the government matching contributions are going to go into your regular TSP account, and any money you already contributed to the regular TSP account has to stay there.
Okay.
So you'll have two TSP accounts. They have to mirror each other in terms of percentages. Whatever percentage contribution you're making among the different funds, that's what's going to happen inside the Roth TSP and the regular TSP. And any withdrawals you make when you're retired, you have to make the same percentage withdrawal from the Roth TSP and the regular TSP. You cannot choose to just withdraw from the regular TSP or just to withdraw from the Roth TSP. And that includes required minimum distributions, which start when someone reaches 70 and a half if they're retired. Then you have to start taking out minimum amounts from your retirement accounts. With 401ks, and the TSP is a 401k, you have to make required minimum distributions even from a Roth 401k, which means the Roth TSP. Now, if you transferred those accounts to IRAs, and you would have to transfer both accounts, so you'd have a regular IRA and a Roth IRA, at that point when you're retired, there are no required minimum distributions ever from a Roth IRA, unlike the Roth TSP. So that would be an incentive once you retire to transfer money to an IRA. Now, if you're still working when you're 70 and a half, there's no required minimum distributions from your 401k. But once you are retired, then that becomes an issue.
Okay. And I can see why a lot of people would say, why is this? But the point, as you made earlier, is it is this. And I can explain why. Well, Congress told them to keep it simple, keep it cheap, as in inexpensive. And if you had the TSP acting like a bank or a brokerage firm, if you had one account in the 2030 fund and the other a third, you know, G fund,
yeah,
F fund. And so I can certainly see why that may be inconvenient for some people, but also probably maybe helps them plan a little bit better. So the advantages and disadvantages of a Roth.
Well, you know, as we mentioned before, the advantages of the Roth is when you withdraw the money, there's no tax. There's no tax on the money you withdraw.
Right.
And if you've transferred the money to a Roth IRA, then there are no required minimum distributions. And this could be a huge advantage. The disadvantage of the Roth is that you reduce your taxable income. You increase your taxable income while you're working, because the contribution of the Roth TSP is not tax deductible the year you make it, which is true of the regular TSP. When you put money in the regular TSP, it reduces your taxable income, and as a result, you know, you pay less in taxes that year. But those taxes are deferred until when you take the money out.
Yeah, and again, guessing what the tax rate's going to be in 2040 is silly.
Yeah, I don't think we have any idea.
Yeah, okay. What about... I know we've done this to some extent, but what are these sort of critical decisions you have to make? What are the points you have to consider when looking at a Roth?
Well, I think the first question is, can I afford to have a lower take-home pay because I will, making contributions with after-tax money? So can I afford the reduction in my take-home pay? The second thing is, you know, how long a time period is there before I will need to start withdrawing money from the account? So if you're 5 years away from, you know, withdrawing funds from your TSP accounts or account, I don't think a Roth, you know, to me doesn't seem that great a decision. where it really works to me is for younger people. And, you know, if you're an aggressive investor and you expect a very high rate of return, then I think, you know, you're talking about later on in your life, one, not having any required minimum distributions, potentially, and two, not paying tax on a much, on a very large withdrawal, perhaps, because you paid tax on a much smaller contribution.
I mean, in theory, or I guess in practice, too, you could put in $10,000 of your own, pay taxes on that at whatever your rate is. But if you become a millionaire in the process, if those funds grow to $1 million, then at the end of the line, you say, give it to me, and they give it all to you.
Yeah. All the money you take out of the Roth TSP, there's not going to be tax on any of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I mentioned before, I mean, reducing your taxable income can benefit you in a lot of different ways. It can reduce your Social Security tax on your Social Security income, reduce your Medicare Part B premium. You know, there may be other benefits to having a lower tax rate. And, you know, but it depends on affordability and other things. Now, one thing I would keep in mind is that even people who are brand new to the federal government, if they start out with a Roth IRA, they will still, at the end, whenever they leave the government, have money in both a regular IRA and a Roth IRA. So if taxes are higher or lower, they're kind of covered both ways. And of course, for people who are already employed, have been making contributions to the regular TSP, starting to make contributions to the Roth TSP will leave them, you know, really probably, unless they're very young, with maybe more money in the regular TSP than the Roth TSP when they retired. So whether taxes are high or low, they have some in each type of an account. So, you know, there's some diversification
right there. And if you have to, you have to have both. As you said,
you have to have both.
And say I'm putting in five to a Roth and five to the regular TSP. So on the five to the TSP, that's tax deferred.
Yeah.
And also I'm getting a 5% match from the government. So, I mean, it looks like a win-win to me.
I think it's a great option for, you know, I'm really glad the TSP was able to do this. They've done it a lot earlier, you know, than most other retirement plans. I don't usually, for my clients who are employed in the private sector, I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a Roth 401k option. I mean, it's allowed.
But hit on some really good features of this when we come back on a break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Arthur Stein, that well-known financial planner in the Washington area. Art, give us your handle here. How can people reach you?
Okay. My website is www.arthursteinfinancial.com. So A-R-T-H-U-R-S-T-E-I-N financial.com. And if you get on there, you can sign up for my newsletter. And also, I have a blog that you may find interesting. There's some other information, of course, on there about me. And my email address is art@arthursteinfinancial.com. So art@arthursteinfinancial.com.
Okay, and we'll get that in the column as well, too.
Thank you.
Now, talking about the differences in between a regular TSP account and a Roth account. You have to have both, as you say, and they have to. The contributions have to be equal. That is, you can't invest in one fund in the Roth and another fund.
The allocation of your contributions has to be identical.
Okay.
Now, if you have an existing account, of course, the balances are not going to be identical.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It's just the contributions have to be identical, and when you're retired, withdrawals that you make have to be identical. Which is a disadvantage.
Yeah, okay. But at least on 50% of it, it'll be tax-free, correct?
Well, or whatever, you know, whatever the Roth TSP, you know, might be half your account value. It might be you know, very different, depending upon whether you had started out with a balance already in the regular TSP.
Right.
And of course, if you were putting in 5%, the government's putting in 5%. But if you're putting in 10%, the government's still only putting in 5%. So at that point, your TSP could be larger than your regular
TSP. But I mean,
each individual
withdrawal would be identical, and that would be 50-50.
It's a percentage of the account value.
Yeah, okay. All right. What about having a Roth TSP when you're retired?
Well, then it becomes, disadvantageous. You know, the TSP is a great 401k when you're accumulating money. And when you're retired, though, then you get into a lot of restrictions that the TSP has on withdrawing funds. And one of those, I'll talk about how it affects the Roth in just a second, but if you want to make a lump sum withdrawal from the TSP, whether it's a Roth or the regular TSP, you can only do that once in your lifetime. And, you know, the second time you want to do a lump sum, which is, you know, a one-time withdrawal of a certain amount of money, you have to close the account. And I have lots of retired clients who every couple of years want to make a lump sum withdrawal from their retirement accounts and IRAs because they're going on a big trip or fixing up the house. You can't do that with the TSP. In terms of monthly withdrawals, with the TSP, once you start a monthly withdrawal, you can't change it for 12 months. And with a regular IRA, you can change the monthly withdrawal as often as you want. And another very important issue is with the TSP, again, whether it's the regular or the Roth, when you make a withdrawal, it's going to come out of every fund you're invested in based upon the percentage value of that fund. With an IRA, you don't have to do that. And what I do for my investment clients is when it comes to withdrawals, we decide whether to take it out of the stock fund or the bond fund, depending upon what the, you know, current, how the markets are doing. If stocks are way up, I would say let's sell at a profit and take it out of the stock funds. For 2008 and stocks were way down, I would say let's take it out of the bond funds and not sell stocks when they're, you know, really depressed in price. And with the TSP, you have to take the same percentage amount, and it's a percentage of the balance, out of both the Roth and the regular TSP. If you had transferred those funds to an IRA, you could choose to take money only out of the regular IRA or only out of the Roth IRA. And when it comes to required minimum distributions, if you're still in the TSP when you're 70 and a half, you have to make a required minimum distribution from the Roth TSP. But if you've transferred those funds to IRAs, you only have to make required minimum distributions from the regular IRA, and you never have to make required minimum distributions from the Roth IRA. So that could be a big advantage.
Now, is the TSP, or the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, people that run the TSP, are they going to make any changes? Is there something coming down the road?
Well, Mike, my understanding is that a lot of these restrictions are just restrictions for 401ks in general, and therefore it's not something the TSP board can change. And for instance, even if you were working for a private company, if you worked for one that had a Roth 401k and you were retired, you'd still have to do required minimum distributions from the Roth 401k. So at that point, it's not anything the TSP board can change. It's something only Congress can change.
Well, there's some of the drawbacks of a TSP, particularly in retirement, but some of the pros, particularly when you're working in this, and one thing, this 5% match, which most federal workers seem to take for granted, it's huge, right?
It's huge. It's, you know, it's as if you're increasing your earnings by that amount, and it means if you're putting in 5% and the government's matching that with 5%, you've got 10% going into your retirement plan. If you do that at an early age and keep it going, that would be pretty good. Now, if you put in more than 5%, and everybody should try to do that, the government match doesn't go up beyond the original 5% that they match.
Right.
But still, that is a very nice benefit.
That's 5% more
than...
And
that's something that you don't often find in the private sector.
Years ago, at a previous employer, I was going to do a column about the differences in the 401ks in the government and private sector. And the other one was a COLA, the value of a cost of living adjustment in retirement. And I called our HR office and I said, when is the last time retirees from our company got a COLA? And she said, what's that? She was the HR director, so she knew. And the other thing that I think is that one of the jewels in the crown in this Roth TSP Roth is, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's no income limit to participating.
Right. The only limit on putting money into the Roth TSP is the same limit that you have on putting money in the regular TSP. Mm-hmm. It's $18,000 a year unless you're over the age of 50, and then it's $24,000 a year if you're older than 50. If you try and put money in a Roth IRA, you know, which is just like an IRA, it's in addition to your TSP, your ability to put money in is limited by the amount of your taxable income. So lots of people can't put any money in a regular into a Roth IRA, even though they could put money into
right.
a regular IRA.
I think I looked at the limit, and it's like $116,000 for an individual and, say, $180,000 for a couple.
Yeah, something like
and
that.
And a lot of people in this Washington area make that kind of money, and a lot of people in government make that kind of money. So a private sector person, if you make over $116,000 or combined income 180, whatever the number is, you can't have a Roth at all. But in the government, anybody, I assume anybody could have a Roth.
They can have a Roth TSP, mm-hmm. yeah. So even if their income is too high to contribute to a Roth IRA, they can still put money in the Roth TSP. Those income limits do not apply.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that plus the 5% match, which I think a lot of people either aren't aware of or they take it for granted, but just go into the private sector and see how that works out.
Yeah, and you know, it's as we mentioned before on this program, I mean, government employees have a great deal and government retirees. They have the best retirement program there is, maybe, that I know of at least. And you know, the CSRS program is better than the FERS program, but the FERS program is better than anything else I've seen. And it's not only the two things you mentioned, Mike, but also they have a 70% subsidy on their health insurance premium.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big deal. And they've got great group rates, and that's very important. You know, lots of people work for companies, they don't have any group health insurance. Or if they do, the premiums are much higher, and they cannot choose among different programs. I mean,
yeah.
Government employees can, you know,
20 choices
during
yeah.
the open season, they have lots of choices. Most private sector employees don't have any choices, and so their health insurance may or may not be appropriate for their situation.
Yeah, I knew someone that worked for a very small company, and they did provide health insurance, but it was tailor-made to the boss and his wife and
yeah,
their
exactly.
child. You know, it was one that did the best for them, but it wasn't particularly good for other people. And again, you don't have that issue in the government.
Well, before I started my own firm, I worked for a firm that, you know, we had very good health insurance, mm-hmm. and the premiums are based upon, among other things, the average age of the employees.
Oh, yeah.
And this was a lot of younger people. And when I went out on my own,
oh, yeah,
I mean, it was a shock to the system how much you pay in premiums.
Yeah, that's right. What else? Lauren Larson says we have to take a break, and when Lauren says it, we do it. Take a break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. What else should I ask you? We're in the final stretch here. Welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Arthur Stein, former economist, now financial planner, and very familiar with the federal benefit package and in the thrift savings plan in particular. And we were talking during the break about this, the dangers of being too conservative. And you'd think you really you know, normally you'd say the more conservative I am, the better, especially as I get older, especially if I'm retired, because I don't want to lose the money. But you have a different take on it.
Yeah. Being more conservative from an investing point of view means having a higher percentage of your investments in bonds, in the G fund, in the F fund, in the G fund, in the TSP. And being more aggressive means having a higher percentage in the stock funds, which are the C and the S and the I funds. And lots of people have been told that they need to be more conservative as they approach retirement and when they're retired. And some people feel like they should have, like, you know, 80% of their funds in the F and G fund. And if you use the life cycle funds, then you do.
That's what you get.
L income. But the problem is when you start spending the money, what you realize is those more conservative investments, once you factor in taxes and inflation, have lost purchasing power. So when I do seminars, I have this example where I take three people. They each have $10,000 in the TSP. They each put all their money in one of three accounts. One puts all their money in the G fund. One puts all the money in the F fund. One puts all the money in the C fund, which is the S&P 500 stock fund. And starting in 1993, if they took out enough money each year to buy 200 first-class stamps, and I use stamps because they buy the same service every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
this, yeah.
If they took out enough money each year to pay taxes, buy 200 first-class stamps, the two investors who had their money all in G or all in F would have run out of money in by 2010. But the investor who was all in C and taking out the same dollar amount each year would still have money in the C fund. Actually, would probably have more money in the C fund than they started with.
Because of the growth in the market.
Yeah. And remember, we're starting in 1993, so that includes not only the 2008, the 2007 worst decline in the stock market since the Great Depression, but it also includes a very bad stock market decline in 2000.
Yeah.
And that's why people think being more conservative, I think when they hear that, they think it's going to make them more financially secure. But it's not. It's going to reduce the volatility of their investments, the fluctuations in value in the short term. But historically, it would have reduced, you know, the amount of money that could be produced during a long retirement in the long term. Now, past performance, no guarantee of future performance. But we're looking at, you know, a very long historical record where stocks have significantly outperformed bonds. And lots of people expect stock returns to be lower in the future than they have been in the past. But they also usually expect bond returns to be lower in the future than they have in the past. You know, to me, the key question is, will stocks continue to outperform bonds over long periods of time the way they've done historically?
Right. And with that, past performance is no indicator, caveat. Your example of the guy walking up a hill with a yo-yo.
Yeah.
It's up and down, but if you look at the charts, the historical charts, it's up.
Well, yeah, the way I put it is you're walking up the hill, you've got a yo-yo, the yo-yo's going up and down, that represents the stock market going up and down. But at some point, you're so far up the hill that even when the stock market is at its lowest point, even when the yo-yo is at its lowest point, it's still higher than it was further down the hill at its highest point.
Right.
And that's, you know, when you look at very long-term stock market returns, those fluctuations get ironed out to a certain extent. And one of the key things I do for my investment clients is make sure that they are not in too conservative an investment allocation. And, you know, I do that by, one, looking at how much money they're going to need from their investments and when they're going to need it, but also talking to them about, you know, the historical rates of return. Mm-hmm. And when they get nervous, they can call me and we can talk it out about whether they need to make a change or not. And, you know, like in last August, we had a sharp stock market decline and I called my clients and we used that as an opportunity for some of them to take money out of their bond investments and put it into stock investments. And that was a profitable trade.
That was how you spent 2 days of your vacation at
the
beach.
That's how I spent
right?
2 days of my vacation. My wife wasn't happy about it, but my clients were.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing I noticed with our 401k here at the station is, and it's a good one, but after the recession, it was flat. It was down hugely, and then it was flat. And I'd get my statements, and the only increase was the amount of money I'd put into it.
Yeah.
Nothing else. It was just sat there, and it was literally like pouring money in a hole and not seeing the water rise. And then one day, 2 or 3 years afterward, I did nothing, which I'm really good at doing, but I did nothing, didn't panic, didn't think about it. And then one day I opened it, and I thought I'd gotten somebody else's brochure, because it was boom, back up there.
See, that's it. I mean, the people who were patient in 2007 didn't panic in 08 or 09, and just left their money in, ended up doing great. People who panic and pulled their money out, usually they've never put the money back in. I just met someone last week who they were very proud of the fact they pulled the money out before the market went down in 07, but they'd never put the money back in. It's still in the G fund. And actually, they are worse off than if they'd just left the money
nothing.
In the stock funds, taken the big hit, and then ridden the everything back up.
Yeah, the guy that got out in September 1929.
They're worse off by about 50%. I mean, it's a big, big number. They have much less money. They have hundreds of thousands of dollars less than if they just left their money in the stock funds.
Yeah, that's right. The getting out is easy. And of course, often, as in the case of the 2007, 8, 9 recession, you're literally selling low.
Yeah. See, that's it. They're selling low, and then the market never looks good. And actually, these people I just met, I asked him if he was going to go back into the market. He said no. He thought it looked expensive.
and it
you
does.
Know, I just thought, well, yeah. You know, it looked pretty cheap in 07 and 08, and you didn't go back in. Now you're not going back in because it looks expensive. You know, so when are you going to go back in?
I have no financial planner, and he, I think there was a big recession in 1997, some period like that. Anyhow, he had one client that got out of the market, has never gone back.
Absolutely.
Never gone back.
People don't go back in. It's too nerve-wracking to go back in. It's less nerve-wracking to just leave your money in.
Well, another subject, these L funds, the life cycle funds. These are, I'm sorry, we were out of time here. Arthur Stein, I want to thank you very much for coming.
Remember,
this show will be archived on our homepage, and we'll see you all here next Wednesday, I hope.